In a political landscape often dominated by cautious calculation, Ron DeSantis stands as a rare exception, a leader who has consistently chosen conviction over polling data. The Courage to Be Free offers an inside look at how Florida's governor transformed a razor-thin electoral victory into a governance revolution that has attracted nationwide attention. The book has become required reading in conservative circles, with figures from Tucker Carlson to Ben Shapiro praising its blueprint for effective leadership. What makes this memoir particularly compelling is how it connects DeSantis' personal journey from small-town Florida to Yale, the Navy, Congress, and ultimately the governor's mansion with his philosophical approach to wielding power in defense of individual liberty. As millions of Americans have literally voted with their feet by relocating to Florida during his tenure, DeSantis' story represents more than just one politician's rise. It illustrates a potential roadmap for national renewal based on constitutional principles and unflinching courage in the face of elite opposition. DeSantis' journey begins in Dunedin, Florida, a small town of 30,000, where his life revolved around baseball, school, church, and friends within a 5-mile radius of home. Born to working-class parents, his father worked for Nielsen television ratings while his mother served as a nurse, DeSantis grew up in a modest 3-bedroom ranch house, sharing a bedroom with a sister until age 10. His early years were marked by Little League games, where he developed both athletic skills and leadership abilities as a pitcher and shortstop. When his team qualified for the World Series in Williamsport, it marked his first significant exposure to competition beyond Florida's borders, teaching him that hard work could achieve seemingly impossible goals. After graduating as valedictorian from Dundee in high school, DeSantis faced the daunting challenge of financing an Ivy League education. Working as an electrician's assistant during summers, he earned minimum wage helping wire commercial buildings across Tampa Bay. At Yale, he experienced profound culture shock as a flip-flop-wearing Florida kid among wealthy East Coast elites, many of whom arrived in luxury cars and spoke of summer homes in the Hamptons. The cultural divide became even more apparent in his classes, where he encountered professors who blamed America for the Cold War, advocated for communism despite its historical failures, and openly denigrated Christianity. While the campus had banned ROTC programs, citing opposition to military policies, DeSantis observed how privileged students from wealthy backgrounds paradoxically embraced anti-American, anti-capitalist ideologies while enjoying the fruits of capitalism. To afford Yale's steep tuition, DeSantis cobbled together a demanding schedule of part-time jobs, recycling trash across campus before dawn, parking cars at athletic events, coaching youth baseball clinics, and tutoring students in mathematics. Living paycheck to paycheck in a cramped off-campus apartment, he still managed to excel academically while serving as captain of the varsity baseball team. A memorable highlight came when former President George H.W. Bush attended a Yale baseball game, and DeSantis had the opportunity to meet him. Despite their political differences, DeSantis was impressed by Bush's humble demeanor and respected his World War II military service. After graduating magna cum laude with just $101.24 in his bank account, a figure he remembers precisely because it represented his entire worldly wealth, DeSantis earned admission to Harvard Law School. The September 11, 2001 attacks occurred during his first year there, profoundly affecting his worldview and inspiring him to later join the Navy as a JAG officer. Throughout his Ivy League years, the stark contrast between his modest upbringing and the privileged backgrounds of many classmates who embraced leftist ideology gave him unique insight into America's growing cultural and economic divides. Rather than pulling him toward elite consensus, these experiences strengthened his appreciation for traditional American values, constitutional principles, and the opportunities afforded by free market capitalism, themes that would later define his political career. DeSantis' first active duty assignment as a Navy JAG officer took him to Naval Station Mayport in Florida, where he quickly established himself as a dedicated military prosecutor. His caseload was diverse and challenging, handling complex cases involving sexual abuse, narcotics trafficking, and corruption within the ranks. he gained a reputation for thorough preparation and unwavering commitment to justice, prosecuting dozens of court-martials and administrative proceedings that helped maintain military discipline and order. It was during this period that a chance encounter would alter the course of his personal life. While practicing his golf swing at a Jacksonville driving range, he met Casey Black, a local television news reporter covering the crime beat for WJXT. Their shared Midwestern background, both having Ohio roots, and mutual interest in politics and public service sparked an immediate connection. Casey's sharp intellect and journalistic background complemented DeSantis's legal mind, and their relationship quickly blossomed. After serving as a prosecutor for a year, DeSantis made the consequential decision to volunteer for deployment to Iraq. He underwent intensive training with Naval Special Warfare SEAL Team 1, preparing for the complex challenges ahead in a war zone. His deployment to Iraq's volatile Al-Anbar province came at a critical juncture in the conflict, coinciding with the Anbar Awakening, a pivotal alliance between U.S. forces and Sunni tribal leaders against Al-Qaeda. In his role as legal advisor, DeSantis navigated the intricate balance between aggressive military operations and complex rules of engagement. He worked closely with SEAL teams and other special operations units, providing real-time counsel during high-stakes missions against Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Unlike some military lawyers who adopted overly cautious approaches that could hamper operations, DeSantis developed a reputation for finding practical solutions that allowed missions to proceed while remaining within legal boundaries. The deployment offered DeSantis a front-row seat to the broader implications of America's post-9/11 military engagements. He witnessed firsthand how the burden of war fell disproportionately on a small segment of American society. Unlike the total national mobilization of World War II, where sacrifice was widely shared, the modern all-volunteer military meant that a tiny percentage of Americans bore the full weight of combat deployments. This created a troubling dynamic where service members endured multiple tours of duty, leading to unprecedented rates of family strain, divorce, and psychological trauma, while most Americans remained largely untouched by the war's impact. DeSantis's observations in Iraq led him to several crucial insights about American foreign policy. He recognized that while U.S. forces would ultimately succeed in dismantling Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which had alienated local Sunni populations through its brutal tactics, the broader goal of establishing a Western-style democracy faced insurmountable cultural barriers. The fundamental disconnect between American concepts of individual liberty and local understanding of freedom, often interpreted through the lens of religious law, highlighted the limitations of exporting democratic systems to societies with different cultural foundations. This experience crystallized his skepticism toward President Bush's ambitious second inaugural address, which had outlined a sweeping vision of promoting global democracy to end tyranny. DeSantis saw this as fundamentally misunderstanding the founder's wisdom about the precise conditions needed for liberty to flourish. The American system's success relied not just on elections, but on specific constitutional structures, separation of powers, checks and balances, federalism, and protected individual rights that couldn't be simply transplanted into societies lacking the cultural and historical context for such institutions. DeSantis's entry into politics wasn't planned, but evolved from growing concern about America's direction under the Obama administration. After leaving active duty as a JAG officer, he channeled his interest in civic engagement through writing, drawing on his knowledge of American history and constitutional principles. His book, Dreams from Our Founding Fathers, offered a detailed critique of progressive policies and their deviation from founding principles, creating opportunities to speak at conservative gatherings throughout Florida. These appearances, from Tea Party meetings to Republican Club events, helped build crucial relationships with grassroots activists who would later form his political base. When Florida gained two new congressional districts in 2012 through reapportionment, DeSantis decided to run despite facing significant obstacles. No campaign experience, virtually no name recognition, limited funds, and established political opponents with deep donor networks. With his wife Casey, a former television news anchor who brought media savvy to the campaign, he launched an aggressive grassroots effort. They personally knocked on over 20,000 doors of likely Republican primary voters, often in Florida's summer heat. This direct approach paid unexpected dividends. Voters were consistently impressed that a congressional candidate personally sought their support, and the campaign gained unfiltered insights about voters' deep frustrations with Republican representatives who campaigned as conservatives but surrendered to the D.C. establishment once elected. In Washington, DeSantis faced the fundamental choice every Republican confronts: drain the swamp or become part of it. He chose the former, maintaining deliberate separation from the Beltway ecosystem. He slept on his office couch rather than renting a Capitol Hill apartment, declined the generous congressional pension and health care plan, and stopped all personal stock trading to avoid even the appearance of conflicts of interest. These choices, while sometimes mocked by colleagues, reinforced his outsider status and commitment to reform. The divide between D.C. Republicans and grassroots voters became starkly evident on immigration policy. Beltway GOP leadership, influenced by consultant class wisdom, believed Republicans needed to embrace comprehensive immigration reform and potential amnesty to win Hispanic votes, a fundamental misreading of Romney's 2012 loss. In reality, polling showed Hispanic Americans prioritized education, economy, and crime over immigration reform, and many actually supported robust border enforcement. Meanwhile, powerful corporate interests aggressively pushed for expanded immigration programs to secure cheap labor sources, disregarding negative impacts on American workers' wages and local communities. After his first term, DeSantis joined like-minded colleagues, including Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, to create the House Freedom Caucus, which quickly became a powerful force for conservative principles. Their message was simple but revolutionary in Washington: actually follow through on campaign promises made to voters. With 30 to 40 committed members voting as a unified bloc, they could effectively block problematic legislation and ensure bills fulfilled promises to voters. The caucus successfully forced leadership votes, influenced major legislation, and, though they couldn't fully bend the entrenched swamp to their will, they significantly disrupted the Beltway machine. Their efforts highlighted the Republican establishment's disconnect from voters and helped pave the way for future outsider candidates, including at the presidential level. Running for Florida governor in 2018 presented enormous challenges in a state known for its political complexity. Florida's status as the quintessential swing state, with razor-thin margins often deciding statewide races, made every campaign decision crucial. The 2018 election cycle was particularly challenging, as national indicators pointed to a strong Democratic wave. In the Republican primary, DeSantis faced an uphill battle against Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, who had secured backing from virtually every power center in Tallahassee, from established lobbyists and longtime donors to major corporations. The sugar industry, wielding exceptional influence in Florida politics through its extensive agricultural operations and employment base, threw its considerable weight behind Putnam. Despite being outspent nearly 3-1 and consistently trailing in early polls, DeSantis executed a masterful debate strategy. He particularly emphasized immigration policy differences with Putnam, who had supported more permissive immigration measures. DeSantis's unwavering stance on border security and opposition to sanctuary cities resonated deeply with Republican primary voters. The impact was immediate and dramatic. Within days of the decisive debate performance, polling showed an unprecedented 28-point swing, from trailing by 10 points to leading by 18. The final primary result validated this shift, with DeSantis securing a commanding 20-point victory despite millions in negative advertising. The general election battle against Andrew Gillum emerged as perhaps the most consequential in Florida's modern history. Gillum, Tallahassee's progressive mayor, had shocked the political establishment by winning the Democratic nomination with strong grassroots support. The national media quickly anointed him as the next Obama, despite policy positions that seemed at odds with Florida's traditional centrism. Gillum advocated for Medicare for all, significant tax increases, and abolishing ICE, positions that had never succeeded in statewide Florida races. Throughout the campaign, Democratic operatives and media figures relentlessly accused DeSantis of racial insensitivity, often taking his words out of context or misconstruing standard campaign rhetoric as dog whistles. Rather than follow the conventional political playbook of apologizing or retreating, DeSantis directly confronted these accusations, refusing to cede ground and actively challenging media narratives. This approach kept his base energized while preventing the charges from defining his campaign. The election night proved historic, with results remaining uncertain until the conservative panhandle counties reported their totals. Before major networks could project a winner, Gillum called to concede in a race decided by roughly 32,000 votes out of more than 8 million cast. Upon taking office, DeSantis moved swiftly to reshape Florida's judiciary, particularly the state Supreme Court. Three immediate appointments transformed the court from a 4-3 liberal majority to a 6-1 conservative majority. His judicial selection criteria were clear and unwavering. Nominees needed to demonstrate understanding of the judiciary's limited constitutional role, willingness to overturn flawed precedents, and the fortitude to withstand criticism from established legal institutions and media outlets. This newly constituted conservative court proved crucial in advancing his education agenda. Working closely with legislative leadership, DeSantis created the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program, innovatively funded through direct tax dollars rather than traditional corporate tax credits. This structure allowed the program to expand based on actual demand rather than available tax credit donations. By the conclusion of his first term, Florida had enacted comprehensive education reforms, addressing multiple critical areas: early literacy initiatives, competitive teacher compensation, enhanced civics education, strengthened parental rights, and expanded career technical training opportunities. The COVID-19 pandemic validated President Eisenhower's prescient warning about the dangers of a scientific-technological elite commandeering policy and eroding freedoms. Rather than promoting calm, public health elites fomented hysteria, produced flawed modeling to justify destructive policies, and allowed political partisanship to override evidence-based medicine. When DeSantis asked Dr. Birx whether the expert-advocated policies had any precedent in modern history, she replied, "This is kind of like our own science experiment." This troubled him deeply. He began studying research himself rather than relying on Faucian pronouncements. Discovering Donald Henderson's principles that emphasized minimizing disruption to normal social functioning during epidemics, the expert's partisan nature became undeniable when 1,200 public health authorities who had condemned any gathering suddenly endorsed George Floyd protests while specifically rejecting anti-lockdown protests. This revealed their true colors. These weren't impartial scientists, but political actors. While Florida initially followed federal guidance for about 4 weeks of essential business operations, DeSantis defined essential broadly and refused to close beaches and golf courses. When the predicted April hospital surge never materialized, he revoked his order suspending elective procedures. He remained confident during Florida's summer COVID wave that it would follow natural patterns without requiring lockdowns, despite relentless media attacks and Dr. Fauci publicly advising Florida to seriously look at shutting down. DeSantis refused to implement mask mandates and issued an executive order requiring all Florida schools to open for in-person instruction 5 days a week for the 2020-2021 school year, despite fierce opposition from teachers' unions. After the summer wave subsided, he issued orders preventing local governments from imposing mandates and restrictions, guaranteeing Floridians' right to work and businesses' right to operate. He later worked with the legislature to ban vaccine passports and protect workers from vaccine mandates. Between April 2020 and mid-2022, Florida experienced 15.6% excess mortality, lower than New York's 20% and California's 17.7%. Throughout the pandemic, Florida typically ranked between 15th and 25th in per capita COVID mortality, despite having one of America's most elderly populations. On an age-adjusted basis, over 30 states had higher COVID mortality rates. The Committee to Unleash Prosperity's comprehensive study ranked Florida as the top-performing large state, sixth best overall, while lockdown states like New Jersey, New York, and California performed worst, destroying jobs and education without saving more lives. For most of his time as governor, DeSantis maintained a cordial and mutually beneficial relationship with Disney, Florida's largest private employer. During the pandemic, this partnership proved particularly valuable as Disney executives praised his leadership in Florida. While California's strict lockdown policies kept Disneyland closed for over a year, Disney World in Florida reopened in July 2020 with safety protocols, saving thousands of jobs and millions in revenue. This stark contrast between the two states' approaches became a powerful symbol of Florida's business-friendly environment. However, the harmonious relationship deteriorated dramatically during the 2022 legislative session over the controversial Parental Rights in Education Bill. Though media outlets dubbed it the Don't Say Gay Bill, the legislation's actual content focused on protecting young children by prohibiting classroom instruction on sexuality and gender ideology in kindergarten through third grade. It also established guidelines for age-appropriate sex education in higher grades, while ensuring parental notification about health services and changes in student support. Left-wing activists, recognizing the political liability of openly advocating for gender ideology instruction to young children, employed a sophisticated pressure campaign targeting major corporations. They specifically focused on Disney, understanding its cultural significance and influence. The pressure intensified when Burbank-based employees staged walkouts and demanded the company take a stand. In a pivotal moment, CEO Bob Chapek reached out to DeSantis seeking guidance. The governor's response was unequivocal. Do not get involved with this legislation. You will end up putting yourself in an untenable position. This warning would prove prophetic. Despite initial resistance, Disney ultimately succumbed to internal pressure and publicly opposed the bill. DeSantis responded with unprecedented firmness, declaring that Florida's policies would serve its citizens, not woke corporations. The conflict escalated when Disney, after the bill's signing, took the extraordinary step of pledging to seek its repeal, moving from mere corporate virtue signaling to actively opposing democratically enacted state law. Disney's political dominance in Florida dated back to the 1960s, when it secured extraordinary privileges through the Reedy Creek Improvement District. This special arrangement essentially granted Disney self-governing status, including the power to levy taxes, issue bonds, and control utilities across its vast property. The company had traditionally wielded this influence carefully, maintaining bipartisan support through its image as an all-American family entertainment company. Working methodically with legislative leaders, DeSantis crafted legislation to dismantle Disney's special privileges. The speed and decisiveness of the response shocked political observers. Within days, the legislature passed the bill, marking what observers called the Florida equivalent of the shot heard round the world. The financial impact was immediate and severe. Within 6 weeks of opposing the parental rights bill, Disney's market capitalization plunged by over $63 billion. More damaging was the unprecedented collapse in public support. Disney's net favorability rating crashed from plus 56 to just plus 3, the largest decline in the company's history. This dramatic fall demonstrated the risks corporations face when they abandon their core business mission to engage in controversial political activism. The stark contrast between Florida's approach and those of leftist-run states like New York, Illinois, and California has driven unprecedented migration to Florida. In 2020, Florida gained a net $23.7 billion in adjusted gross income from migration, far ahead of second-place Texas at $6.3 billion, while New York, California, and Illinois lost $19.5 billion, $17.8 billion, and $8.5 billion respectively. Florida's superior tax and economic climate has attracted individuals and businesses. While Democrat-dominated states tax heavily, spend profligately, and regulate excessively, Florida taxes lightly, spends conservatively, and regulates reasonably. This favorable environment helped Florida lead the nation in new business formations since January 2020, exceeding California by 20% despite having half its population. Florida has outperformed traditionally advantaged states in education while spending less per pupil. The state ranked third nationally in K-12 achievement according to Education Week's Quality Counts rankings, led the nation in the Center for Education Reform's Parent Power Index, and took first place in the Heritage Foundation's Education Freedom Report card. After controlling for demographic differences, the Urban Institute ranked Florida first in both fourth-grade reading and math. DeSantis's approach to governance rejects the administrative state model that has captured Washington. Unlike the federal government, where congressional leaders have abandoned their oversight authority through continuing resolutions and omnibus bills that put government on autopilot, Florida fosters accountability. The legislature actively uses its power of the purse, and DeSantis has wielded the line item veto aggressively, setting records by cutting $3.1 billion from the budget. The 2022 election validated this approach with historic results, the greatest Republican gubernatorial victory in Florida history with a nearly 20-point landslide. DeSantis won independent voters by over 15 points, captured nearly 60% of Hispanic voters, won a majority of women voters, and achieved the highest percentage of black voters for any Republican gubernatorial candidate in modern Florida history. His victory margin grew from just over 30,000 votes in 2018 to more than 1.5 million, the largest raw vote margin in Florida gubernatorial history. The Florida blueprint is simple: lead with conviction, deliver for constituents, and reap political rewards. By taking strong stands despite media opposition, focusing on results rather than rhetoric, and using political power strategically to defend individual liberty, Florida has demonstrated that effective conservative governance is possible, even in a diverse, modern state. As DeSantis concludes, the road less traveled has made all the difference.